So Joyce, neither Joyce nor I have any disclosures to make. And I must be doing this the wrong way, yes. I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation, just so you get a sense of the scope of the project that we were working on. We're the public hospital city in New York system. We're there for people regardless of their ability to pay. We're 11 different acute care hospitals, lots of nursing homes, many clinics. We also have our own certified home health agency, a managed care organization, and affiliations with a lot of the New York City medical teaching hospitals. In terms of behavioral health, we're the largest inpatient bed provider in New York City. We operate approximately 41% of the adult licensed beds. All of our 11 facilities have psychiatric emergency services. And just to give you a sense, in 2009, we had 36,000 visits in our psych emergency services. And in our inpatient beds, over 19,000 discharges. So what am I going to talk about today? I'm going to talk about our seclusion and restraint reduction project and why we were focusing on seclusion and restraint reduction and how we achieved this organizational change in an organization as large as HHC, and then talk about some results. So to keep us all on the same page, I'm going to give you the definition from CMS about what seclusion and restraint are. Probably many of you know this. Seclusion is the involuntary confinement of a patient alone in a room or an area from which the patient is physically prevented from leaving. And restraint is any manual method, physical or mechanical device, material, or equipment that immobilizes or reduces the ability of a patient to move his or her arms, legs, body, or head freely, or a drug or medication when it is used as a restriction to manage the patient's behavior or restrict the patient's freedom of movement and is not a standard treatment dosage for the patient's condition. So why did we decide to reduce seclusion and restraint? One of the reasons was that regulators and advocates have been pushing us to do this, and I'm now happy to say that seclusion and restraint use is now seen as a treatment failure on an inpatient service rather than an option. And also, this was based on a series of articles in the Hartford Courant that actually won the Pulitzer Prize talking about deaths as a result of seclusion and restraint use. It's also highly associated with patient injury. There's an estimate from Harvard Risk Center that 50 to 150 deaths occur a year as a result of seclusion and restraint use, many injuries to broken bones and brain injuries, and the trauma. Many of you who work with mental health clients know that there's a high degree of trauma in this population, so using this intervention is a re-traumatization and can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder. It's also associated with high degree of staff injuries. In one study, the percentage was 26% in a mental health professional's working life. The positive thing to say is that there's extensive literature that shows with training, staff training, you can significantly reduce seclusion and restraint, and you can also reduce patient and staff injuries. Here's the regulatory agenda. I spoke about some of this earlier. SAMHSA had a roadmap to seclusion and restraint-free mental health services. Our mental health authority started something called Creating Violence-Free and Coercion-Free Mental Health Hospitals. Joint Commission issued new standards. This was in 2000, so it's not so new now. And CMS issued new regulations that became effective in 2008. So here's our project. The goal was to reduce seclusion and restraint use through the use of program redesign, training, and data to benchmark. What we did was we launched this project. When I say we, in central office, we managed the project, my office. So we brought together all the facilities, had them identify a team, gave them some baseline data from 2006 and told them, and this was different because many people report seclusion and restraint data other places, but they were going to report it centrally and they were going to report it transparently, meaning for the first time in our organization, all those 11 hospitals would see everybody else's data. This was remarkably powerful. Our teams include the director of psychiatry, the administrator, and all these other people. Also, our special officers. I don't know if you work in hospitals, whether you have security staff. In New York City, we have something that's called a special officer, and they actually have police powers. So these are the people that were often called in instances where there's a crisis. So these are the six core strategies. I can't take credit for these. These are from the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors. They got a SAMHSA grant to do research in eight states, New York being one of them. And they were testing the power of these core strategies. So their leadership toward organizational change, that's why it was so key that our teams had the psych director and the administrator and other key leaders on the teams, use of data to inform practice, workforce development, meaning that you had to change who you were looking for to hire. You had to find people who had good crisis de-escalation skills, that understood what a traumatic experience it would be for clients to be put in restraint. And then obviously the use of seclusion and restraint prevention tools like individualized crisis prevention plans and sensory modulation, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. So the other two are full inclusion of consumers and families in staff training, treatment planning, and asking patients as soon as they come into our psych emergency service what makes you agitated or what upsets you and what also helps you calm down. And rigorous debriefing. Every time there's an event, it's required by Joint Commission standards, but we probably weren't doing it as deeply as you can around really testing what went wrong. Did we know what the precursors were, you know, and really trying to plan for the next or avoiding the next experience. So we did corporate-wide training in these six core strategies. About 760 people were trained. And the most important piece was that they had to develop a plan for their individual facility, because even though we're a corporation, as you can imagine, with 11 facilities through five different boroughs in New York, they all have their culture, they all have their strengths and their weaknesses with regard to this effort. And then we did massive crisis de-escalation training using the MANT system was one of them. We trained 465 staff in that. We also use CPI, which is a well-known national vendor on crisis prevention, and they do a train-the-trainer model. So the number may look small of 67, but that really resulted in a lot of training that occurred back in the facilities. And then what we did is we hired the people that had done the six core strategies training to do individual facility consultations and talk with them about the six core strategies and benchmark them, basically, or grade them on where they were with their progress after they'd received the training. And this was very useful. And so over 100 behavioral health leaders participated in those individual facility follow-up consultations. We implemented sensory modulation. This is an emerging best practice. It's used to reduce agitation. It involves, I mean, people have seen those balls like this, you know, that some people have. That's a sensory modulation tool. And we used grant funds to help buy equipment for each of the units. So we bought a toolkit, a sensory modulation toolkit for each of our 80 plus units. And then we did training with the staff so that they would feel comfortable using this equipment. We were expecting them to also integrate this use into the treatment plan, too. It wasn't going to be some sort of thing that was off on the side. It really had to be integrated as part of the treatment, set of treatment options for people. So here's some pictures of the, you know, of the, that's a, that was on the child unit, that large rocking chair, and that, and someone's looking at one of the cabinets that we bought people, and we bought people big teddy bears and stuff like that. So what are our results? On the adult psychiatric inpatient services, in terms of frequency of restraint, we decreased 60%, which is fairly dramatic, I think. And given the fact that this is a corporate picture, I won't tell you, I'll tell you that it wasn't even across all 11 facilities, but this is the corporate picture that we decreased frequency of use on the psychiatric adult inpatient service by 60%. And this is really dramatic, I think. The mean duration per episode decreased 83% fiscal year 06 is our baseline, and we're still decreasing now. And then seclusions, which not all of our facilities use, there was a 61% decrease. And then the mean duration of seclusion episodes decreased 64%. So this is a summary of what you've just seen, but I'll add the detail that we decreased from 4.12 hours to 0.96 hours. So we're really, what we're doing is we're restraining, secluding fewer people, and even when we do it, they're not staying in nearly as long. We had this bizarre belief among our clinicians that because we were allowed 2 hours, people should stay in 2 hours. You know, there was this, and then that's the other detail, 2.34 hours to 50.5 minutes. On our psychiatric emergency services, and these are all separate. I know that New York is a little different from other states. We have separate psychiatric emergency services. It's not part of, there's a separate space. It's not part of the general emergency department, although they interact, obviously. So the frequency of restraint decreased 59%, and the mean duration decreased 48%. And here's the detail, from 1.23 hours to 51.08 minutes. So what are we doing now? We're focusing now on our crisis intervention teams, on the inpatient service crisis response teams. We're using peer counselors. I think we're actually very different from a lot of places in that we have a lot of peer counselors on our units. And we've also done something else. We've created a new job title called Behavioral Health Associate, where we take our hospital security or hospital police staff and give them intensive crisis de-escalation training, far more than they receive in general, and they get a pay bump up, and they can be on one of these intervention teams. And we're finally really implementing sensory modulation. We just did a full guideline for its use. And one of the interesting things, and why I said data tracking is so powerful, is when we were doing this monthly feeding back to our directors their results in front of all of their peers on seclusion and restraint reduction, we hadn't done child and adolescent. And surprise, surprise, that didn't change. So now we're focusing on that. So that's, thank you.
We have time for a question for Bob. Anybody? Yes.